Chapter 24. Among the Councils. Someone shook Shallon's arm. It was Serene, and the Aes Sedai was talking to her. "It is in there," Serene said, "in the Hall of the Councils, beneath the dome." Withdrawing her hand, she took a deep breath and gathered her reins. "It is ridiculous to think that the effect is any worse just because we are close," she muttered. "But it does feel so." Shallon roused herself with an effort. The emptiness would not go away, but she forced herself to ignore it. Yet in truth she felt cored like a piece of fruit. They were in a huge— she supposed it was still called a square, though this one was round— a huge square paved with white stone. At the center stood a great palace, a round structure all of white except for the tall blue dome on top, like half of a ball. Massive fluted columns surrounded the upper two levels below the dome, and a steady stream of people flowed up and down the broad white stone stairs leading up to the second level on either side. Except for a pair of tall arched bronze gates standing open directly ahead of them, the lowest level was all white stone carved with diademed women, more than twice life-size, and between them white stone sheaves of grain and bolts of cloth that seemed to have their free ends rippling in a wind, and stacks of ingots that might have been meant for gold or silver or iron or perhaps all three, and sacks spilling out what looked coins and gemstones. Beneath the women's feet, much smaller white stone figures drove wagons and worked forges and looms in a continuous band. These people had made a monument proclaiming their success at trade. That was foolish. When people decided you were better at trade than they not only grew jealous, they became stubborn and tried to demand ridiculous bargains. And sometimes you had no alternative save to accept. She realized that Harina was frowning at her and straightened herself in the saddle. "Forgive me, Wave Mistress," she said. The source was gone, but it would return. Of course it would, and she had her duty. She was ashamed that she had let herself give in to fear, yet the emptiness remained. Oh, light, the emptiness! "I am better now. I will do better from here on." Harina merely nodded, still frowning, and Shallon's scalp prickled. When Harina failed to deliver an expected tongue-lashing, it was because she intended to deliver worse. Cadswain rode straight across the square and through the Hall of the Council's open gates into a large, high-ceilinged room that appeared to be an indoor stable-yard. A dozen men in blue coats squatting beside sedan chairs with both a golden sword and a golden hand painted on the doors looked up in surprise when they rode in. So did the men in blue vests who were unharnessing the team from a coach with the sword and hand sigil, and those sweeping the stone floor with large push-brooms. Two more grooms were leading horses down a wide corridor that gave off the smell of hay and dung. A plump, smooth-cheeked man in his middle years came scurrying across the paving stones, bobbing his head in small bows and dry-washing his hands. Where the other men had their long hair tied at the nape of the neck, his was caught with a small silver clip, and his blue coat appeared of good quality wool, with the golden sword and hand embroidered large on his left breast. "Forgive me," he said with an unctuous smile. "I mean no offense, but I fear you must have mistaken your direction. This is the Hall of the Councils, and—" "Tell First Council Barsala that Cadswain Maladrin is here to see her," Cadswain broke in on him as she dismounted. The man's smile slid off to one side, and his eyes widened. "Cadswain Maladrin? I thought you were—" He cut himself short at her suddenly hard stare, then coughed into his hand, and reassumed his fulsome smile. "Forgive me, Cadswain Sedai. Will you allow me to show you and your companions to a waiting room where you can receive welcome while I send word to the First Council?" His eyes widened slightly as he took in those companions. Plainly he, too, could recognize Aes Sedai, at least in a group. Shallon and Harina made him blink, but he had self-control for one of the shorebound. He did not gape. "I'll allow you to run tell Elise I'm here as fast as your legs can carry you, boy," Cadswain replied, unfastening her cloak and tossing it across her saddle. "Tell her I'll be in the dome and tell her I don't have all day. Well, hop!" This time the man's smile did not slide, it turned sickly, but he only hesitated a moment before setting off at a dead run while shouting for grooms to come take the horses. Catswain had dismissed him from her attention as soon as she finished giving him his orders, however. "Varin, Kumira, you two will come with me," she announced briskly. "Maurice, keep everyone together and ready until I—" "Alana, come back and dismount." "Alana!" Reluctantly, Alana turned her mount away from the gates and climbed down with a sulky glower. Her slim warder, Ivone, watched her anxiously. Catswain sighed as though her patience was almost at an end. "Sit on her if you must, to keep her here, Maurice," she said, handing her reins to a small, wiry groom. "I want everyone ready to leave when I'm done with Elise." Maurice nodded, and Catswain turned to the groom. "A little water is all he needs," she said, giving her horse an affectionate pat. "I haven't exercised him much today." Shallon was more than happy to turn her own horse over to a groom without instructions. She would not mind if he killed the creature. She did not know how far she had ridden in a daze, but she felt as though she had been in that saddle every mile of the however many hundred leagues to Kyrian. She felt rumpled in her flesh as well as her clothes. Abruptly she realized that Jahar's pretty face was not with the other men. Varin's Tomas, a stocky gray head as hard as any of the others, was leading the spotted gray pack animal that had been Jahar's. Where had the young man gotten to? Maurice certainly did not appear concerned by his absence. "This first council," Harina growled, letting Moad help her down. She moved as stiffly as Shallon. He had simply leapt from his horse. "She is an important woman here, Serene?" "You might say she is the ruler of Far Madding, though the other councils they call her first among equals, whatever that is supposed to mean." Handing over her own mount to a groom, Serene looked quite unrumpled. Perhaps she had been upset before over this Turangreal that stole the source, but now she was all cool detachment, like carved ice. The groom stumbled over his own feet, looking at her face. "Once the first council, she advised the queens of Maredo, but since Maredo's dissolution, most first councils have considered themselves the natural heirs of Maredo's rulers." Shallon knew that her knowledge of the Shorebound's history was as uncertain as her knowledge of geography away from the shore, but she had never heard of any nation called Maredo. It was enough for Harina, though. If this first council ruled here, the wave mistress of Clan Shodine must meet her. Harina's dignity demanded no less. She hobbled determinedly across the stable-yard to Cadswain. "Oh, yes," the insufferable Aes Sedai said before Harina could more than open her mouth. "You will come with me as well, and your sister. I think not your swordmaster, though. A man in the dome would be bad enough, but a man with a sword might make the councils fall over in fits. You have a question, wave mistress?" Harina snapped her mouth shut with an audible click of teeth. "Good," Catswain murmured. Shallon groaned. This was not improving her sister's temper by a feather. Catswain led them along broad, blue-tiled corridors hung with bright tapestries and lit by gilded stand-lamps with glittering mirrors, where servants in blue first stared at them in surprise, then made hasty, shore-bound courtesies as they passed. She led them up long, swooping flights of white stone stairs that hung unsupported except where they touched a pale wall, which they did not always. Catswain glided like a swan, but at a speed that made the ache in Shallon's legs begin to burn. Harina's face set in a wooden mask, hiding the effort of trotting upstairs. Even Kumira seemed a trifle surprised, though Cadswain's pace caused her no apparent exertion. Round little Varin churned away at Cadswain's side, now and then smiling over her shoulder at Harina and Shallon. Sometimes Shallon thought she hated Varin, but there was no spite or amusement in those smiles, only encouragement. Cadswain took them up a final curling flight of stairs, enclosed by walls, and suddenly they were on a balcony with an intricate gilded metal railing that ran all the way around. For a moment Shallon gaped. Above her rose an overarching blue dome 100 feet or more high at its peak. Nothing held it up but itself. Her ignorance of the Shorebound extended to architecture as well as geography and history, and Aes Sedai. In fact, her ignorance of the Shorebound was almost complete, excepting only Kyrian. She knew how to draw the plans for a raker and see it built, but she could not begin to imagine how to construct this. Arched doorways edged with white stone, like the one they had come through, marked stairs at three other places around the long balcony. But they were alone, and that seemed to please Cadswain, though all she did was nod to herself. "Kumira, show the wave mistress and her sister Far Madding's guardian." Her voice echoed faintly inside the vast dome. She drew Varin a little distance away, and the pair of them put their heads together. There was no echo of what they whispered. "You must forgive them," Kumira told Harina and Shallan quietly. Even that produced a slight sound, if not quite an echo. "Peace, but this must be awkward, even for Cadswain." She ran her fingers through her short brown hair and shook her head to settle it back in place. "The councils are seldom happy to see Aes Sedai, especially sisters born here. I think they would like to pretend the power doesn't exist. Well, their history gives them reason, and for the last 2,000 years they have had the means to support the pretense. In any event, Cadswain is Cadswain. She seldom sees a swelled head without deciding to deflate it, even when it happens to be wearing a crown or a council's diadem. Her last visit was over 20 years ago, during the Aiel War, but I suspect some who remember it will want to hide under their beds when they learn she is back." Kumira gave a small, amused laugh. Shallan saw nothing to laugh at. Harina twisted her lips, but it made her look as though she suffered from a bad belly. "You wish to see the Guardian?" Kumira went on. "As good a name as any, I suppose. There isn't much to see." She stepped cautiously closer to the gilded railing and peered over as if fearing she might fall, but those blue eyes had sharpened again. "I would give anything to study it, but that is impossible, of course. Who knows what else it might be able to do beside what we already know?" Her tone held as much awe as regret. Shallan had no fear of heights, and she pressed herself against the elaborately worked metal beside the Aes Sedai, wanting to see this thing that had taken the source away. After a moment, Harina joined them. To Shallan's surprise, the drop that made Kumira uneasy was less than 20 feet, below, a smooth floor tiled in blue and white to make a convoluted maze centered on a double-pointed red oval rimmed with yellow. Beneath the balcony, three women in white sat on stools spaced equally around the edge of the floor, right against the dome's wall, and beside each woman, a disc a full span across that looked like clouded crystal had been set into the floor and inlaid with a long, thin wedge of clear crystal that pointed toward the chamber's center. Metal collars surrounded the murky discs, marked off like a compass, but with ever smaller markings between the larger. Shallan could not be sure, but the collar nearest her appeared to be inscribed with numerals. That was all. No monstrous shapes. She had imagined something huge and black that sucked in the light. Her hands tightened on the rail to keep from trembling, and she locked her knees to hold herself still. Whatever was down there, it had stolen the light. A whisper of slippers announced new arrivals on the balcony by the same doorway they had used, about a dozen smiling women with their hair on top of their heads, in flowing blue silk robes worn over their dresses like sleeveless coats, richly embroidered in gold and trailing behind them on the floor. These people knew how to mark out rank. Each woman wore a large pendant in the shape of that gold-rimmed red oval suspended from a necklace of heavy golden links, and the same shape was repeated at the front of each narrow golden diadem. On one woman the red ovals were made of rubies, not enamel, and sapphires and moonstones almost hid the golden circlet on her brows, and she wore a heavy golden signet ring on her right forefinger. She was tall and stately, her black hair drawn up in a large ball, heavily winged with white, though her face was unlined. The others were tall, short, stout, thin, pretty, and plain, none young, and every one of them had an air of authority about her, but she stood out for more than her gems. Compassion and wisdom filled her large, dark eyes, and it was command that she radiated, not simple authority. Shallan did not need to be told that this was the first council, but the woman announced it anyway. "I am Alais Barsala, first council of Far Madding." Her mellifluous voice, deep for a woman, seemed to be making a proclamation and expecting cheers. The sound of her voice bouncing inside the dome gave something like acclamation. Farmadding gives welcome to Harina Din Togara Two Winds, Wave Mistress of Clan Shodine, and Ambassador Extraordinary for the Mistress of the Ships to the Atha An Mier. May the light illumine you and see you prosper. Your coming gladdens every heart in Farmadding. I embrace the chance to learn more of the Atha An Mier, but you must be weary from the rigors of your journey. I have arranged pleasant quarters for you in my palace. When you have rested and eaten, we can talk. To our mutual advantage, if it pleases the light. The others spread the skirts of their robes and made half bows. Harina inclined her head slightly, a hint of satisfaction in her smile. Here, at last, were those who showed her proper respect. And very likely it helped that they did not gape at her and Shallan's jewelry. The messengers from the gates are as quick as ever, it seems, Elise, Cadswain said. Is there no welcome for me? Elise's smile thinned for a moment, and some of the other smiles faded altogether as Cadswain moved to stand beside Harina. Those that remained were forced. A pretty woman with a serious cast to her face went so far as to scowl. We are grateful to you for bringing the Wave Mistress here, Cadswain Sedai. The First Council did not sound particularly grateful. She drew herself up to her full height and looked straight ahead, over Kedswain's head rather than at her. I am sure we can find some way to make the depth of our gratitude known before you leave. She could not have made her dismissal plainer short of a command, but the Aes Sedai smiled up at the taller woman. It was not an unpleasant smile exactly, but neither was it in the least amused. I may not be leaving for a while, Elise. I thank you for the offer of accommodations and accept. A palace on the heights is always preferable to even the best inn. The First Council's eyes widened with startlement, then narrowed in determination. Cadswain must stay with me, Harina said, managing to sound no more than half strangled before Elise could speak. Where she is unwelcome, so am I. This had been part of the bargain forced on her if they were to accompany Cadswain. Among other things, they must go when and where she said until they joined the Corranmore and include her in any invitations they received. That last had seemed very small at the time, especially weighed against the rest, but plainly the woman had known exactly the reception she would receive. No need to be disheartened, Elise, Cadswain leaned toward the First Council confidingly, but she did not lower her voice. The reverberations in the dome magnified her words. I'm sure you no longer have any bad habits for me to correct. The First Council's face flooded with crimson, and behind her back speculative frowns passed between the other councils. Some contemplated her as if with fresh eyes. How did they attain rank and how lose it? Besides Elise, they were 12, surely a coincidence, but the first 12 among a clan's sail mistresses chose the wave mistress, usually one of their own number, just as the first 12 among the wave mistresses chose the mistress of the ships. That was why Harina had accepted that strange girl's words, because she was of the first 12. That and the fact that Two Aes Sedai said the girl saw true visions. A wave mistress or even the mistress of the ships could be deposed, though only for specified causes, such as gross incompetence or losing her wits, and the first 12 had to speak with a unanimous voice. Things seemed to be done differently among the shorebound, and often sloppily. Elise's eyes, fixed now on Cadswain, were both hate-filled and hunted. Perhaps she could feel 12 sets of eyes on her back. The other councils had her on the scales. But if Cadswain had chosen to meddle in the politics of this place, why? And why so bluntly? A man just channeled, Varin said suddenly. She had not joined the rest and was peering over the rail 10 paces away. The dome made her voice carry. Do you have many men channeling lately, First Council? Shallan looked down and blinked. The formerly clear wedges were now black, and rather than pointing toward the chamber's heart, somehow they had turned in roughly the same direction. One of the women below was on her feet, bending over to study where along the marked collar the thin black wedge was pointing, and the other two women were already racing toward a round-top doorway. Suddenly Shallan knew. Triangulation was a simple matter to any windfinder. Somewhere beyond that doorway was a chart, and soon the position where the man had channeled would be marked on it. "It would be red for a woman, not black," Kumira said in almost a whisper. She still stood a little back from the rail, but she was gripping it with both hands and leaning forward to peer at the scene below. "It warns and locates and defends. And what else? The women who made it would have wanted more, perhaps needed more, not knowing what else could be incredibly dangerous." She did not sound frightened, though. She sounded excited. "An Ashaman, I expect," Alice said calmly, pulling her gaze from Cadswain. "They cannot trouble us. They are free to enter the city so long as they obey the law." However calm she was, some of the women behind her tittered like new deck girls their first time among the shorebound. "Forgive me, Aes Sedai. Far Madding gives you welcome. I'm afraid I don't know your name, though." Varen was still gazing down at the dome's floor. Shallan glanced over the rail again and blinked as the thin black wedges changed. One moment they were black and pointing north, the next clear and once again pointing to the center of the maze. They did not turn. They just were one thing, then the other. "All of you may call me Edwina," Varen said. Shallan barely suppressed a start. Kumira did not so much as blink. "Do you consider history, First Council?" Varen continued without looking up. "Gwer Amalasen's siege of Far Madding lasted just 3 weeks. A savage business at the end." "I doubt they want to hear about him," Cadswain said sharply, and indeed, for some reason, more than one of the councils looked uncomfortable. Who in the light was this Gwer Amalasen? The name sounded vaguely familiar, but Shallan could not place it. Some shore-bound conqueror, obviously. Alice glanced at Cadswain, and her mouth tightened. "History records Gwer Amalasen as a remarkable general, Edwina Sedai. Perhaps second only to Arthur Hawkwing himself. What brings him to mind?" Shallan had never seen one of the Aes Sedai traveling with Cadswain fail to heed her most casual warning as quickly as they obeyed her commands, but Varen paid no heed this time. She did not look up. "I was just thinking that he couldn't use the power, yet he crushed Far Madding like an overripe plum." The stout little Aes Sedai paused as though something had just occurred to her. "You know, the Dragon Reborn has armies in Ilion and Tyr, in Andor and Cairion, not to mention many tens of thousands of Aiel. Very fierce, the Aiel. I wonder you can be so complacent about his Ashaman scouting you." "I think you have frightened them quite enough," Cadswain said firmly. Varen finally turned from the gilded rail, her eyes open very wide, a round, startled shorebird. Her plump hands even fluttered like wings. "Oh, I didn't mean... Oh, no! I would think the Dragon Reborn would have moved against you already if he intended to. No, I suspect the Seanchan... You've heard of them? What we hear from Altara and farther west is really quite horrible. They seem to sweep everything before them. No, I suspect they're somewhat more important to his plans than capturing Far Madding. Unless you do something to anger him, of course. Or upset his followers. But I am sure you are too intelligent to do that." She looked very innocent. There was a stir among the councils, the ripple that small fish made on the surface when a lionfish swam below. Cadswain sighed, her patience clearly at an end. "If you want to discuss the Dragon Reborn, Edwina, you must do so without me. I want to wash my face and have some hot tea." The First Council jerked as though she had forgotten Cadswain's existence, incredible as that seemed. "Yes, yes, of course. Kumir, Narvaez, would you please escort the Wave Mistress and Cadswain Sedai to my palace and make them welcome?" That slight hitch was the only sign she gave of discomfort at having Cadswain in her dwelling. "I wish to have some further talk with Edwina Sedai, if it pleases her." Followed by most of the councils, Alice glided away along the balcony. Varen looked suddenly alarmed and uncertain as they gathered her up and swept her along. Shallan did not believe the surprise or unease any more than she had the earlier innocence. She thought she knew now where Jahar was. She just did not know why. The woman Elise had named, the pretty one who had scowled at Cadswain, and a slim, grey-haired woman, took the First Council's request as a command, which perhaps it was. They spread their robes and made those half-bows, asking Harina whether she would be pleased to accompany them, and announcing in flowery terms their pleasure at escorting her. Harina listened with a sour face. They could strew baskets of rose petals in her path if they wished, but the First Council had left her to underlings. Shallon wondered whether there was any way to avoid her sister until her temper cooled. Cadswain did not watch Verin leave with Elise, not openly, but her mouth curved in a faint smile when they vanished through the next arched doorway along the balcony. "Cumir and Narvaez," she said abruptly. "That would be Cumir Powis and Narvaez Maslin? I have heard things about you." That jerked their attention away from Harina. "There are standards any council should meet," Cadswain went on in a firm tone, taking them each by a sleeve and turning them toward the stairs on either side of her. Exchanging worried glances, they led her, Harina apparently quite forgotten. At the doorway, Cadswain paused to look back, but not at Harina or Shallon. "Cumira? Cumira!" The other Aes Sedai gave a start, and with a last lingering look over the railing, pulled herself away to follow Cadswain, which left Harina and Shallon no option except to follow too, or be left to try finding their own way out. Shallon darted after the others, and Harina was no less quick. Still gripping the councils to her sides, Cadswain led the way down the curling stairs, talking in a low voice. With Cumira between her and the three, Shallon could hear nothing. Cumir and Narvaez tried to speak, but Cadswain allowed neither more than a few words before she began again. She seemed calm, matter of fact. The pair with her began to look anxious. What in the light was Cadswain up to? "This place troubles you?" Harina said suddenly. "It is as if I have lost my eyes." Shallon shivered at the truth of that. "I am afraid, Wave Mistress, but the light willing I can control my fear." Light she hoped she could. She desperately needed to. Harina nodded, frowning at the women ahead of them down the stairs. "I do not know whether Elise's palace has a tub big enough for us to bathe together, and I doubt they know honeyed wine, but we will find something." Glancing away from Cadswain and the others, she touched Shallon's arm awkwardly. "I was afraid of the dark when I was a child, and you never left me alone till the fear passed. I will not leave you alone either, Shallon." Shallon missed a step and barely caught herself short of tumbling down head over heels. Harina had not used her name except in private since she was first made sailmistress. She had not been this friendly in private since before that. "Thank you," she said, and with an effort added, "Harina." Her sister patted her arm again and smiled. Harina was unpracticed at smiling, but the awkward effort held warmth. There was no warmth in the look she directed toward the women ahead, though. "Perhaps I truly can make a bargain here. Cadswain has already shifted their ballast, so they ride with a list. You must try to find out why, Shallon, when you get close to her. I would like to put Elise's eye teeth on a string, walking away from me without so much as a word, but not at the expense of letting Cadswain mesh the Coromore in some trouble here. You must find out, Shallon." "I think perhaps Cadswain meddles the way anyone else breathes," Shallon replied with a sigh. "But I will try, Harina. I will do my best." "You always have, sister. You always will. I know that." Shallon sighed again. It was much too soon to test the depth of her sister's newfound warmth. Confession might bring absolution or not, and she could not live with the loss of her marriage and her rank at one blow. But for the first time since Verin had bluntly laid out Cadswain's terms for keeping her secret, Shallon began to consider confession.